Welcome to this week's episode of Active Healthy Aging. I'm your host, Coach Ken. Each week, we will be discussing practical health and fitness strategies and topics to help you regain, maintain, or improve your health and movement practice. Ultimately, our goal is to empower you to create a personal movement practice that will support your activities of daily living, make you fall resistant, and living independently for as long as possible. In this episode, we're going to start off by looking at improving your movement vocabulary for a variety of tasks. In the last episode, I took us through a little romp down memory lane, talking about how and when we collectively drifted away from a functional approach to movement training and towards an aesthetically based type of training. I also reviewed the four pillars of human movement that all able-bodied humans need to be proficient at. And again, those are gait or locomotion is the first pillar. Second pillar are level changes, things like squatting, deadlifting, going up and down stairs, pushing and pulling things or our bodies, and rotation. If you'd like to hear more about this, you can go back into KCIW's webpage and go into Active Healthy Aging under podcasts and check it out. But for now, let's move on. So what do I mean when I refer to our movement vocabulary? I tend to compare this to the metaphor of learning to write. First, we learn the letters of the alphabet. Then we learn how these letters are arranged into words, and then words combined into grammatically to form sentences. Sentences can then be arranged to express a complete thought in a paragraph. And finally, those paragraphs add up to being arranged into something like an article, short story, or a book. This is a pretty well understood progression of learning for any language. In terms of movement vocabulary, we're talking about learning foundational body weight movements first. These will allow us to complete our daily activities or sports with little or no effort, hopefully. As with language learning, the more words or vocabulary you develop, the more complex thoughts you can express in your sentences and paragraphs. So it's the same concept with your movement vocabulary. I would like to remind you here that what we're primarily training when we work out is our nervous system. Yes, you're obviously training your muscles, but you can't fire those without orders from the boss, which would be the brain. Muscles are not independent contractors. They literally need to be told which fibers must fire, when to fire, and at what intensity and for how long. This also reminds us of the all-or-nothing nature of muscle fiber contraction. When a muscle is stimulated to contract, only enough fibers to get the job done are recruited. In other words, each fiber fires to its full potential. If the load requires more fibers to be fired to lift an object, then more are recruited. If you're lifting light weights, you're not stimulating as many fibers, and therefore, those muscles are not going to get bigger or stronger. At the beginning of this discussion, I reviewed the four pillars of human movement. These are the foundational elements of movement that all able-bodied humans need to be able to perform safely and efficiently. Referring back to my writing metaphor, the basic movements of all humans would be things like walking, again, squatting, deadlifting, pushing, pulling, and rotation. You should be getting these down by now. So, these are all vocabulary that a youngster must navigate through when starting to experience the world in an upright manner. As infants, we primarily learn to watch and by self-discovery or trial and error. This is our primary learning mechanism. During this rich time of development, we have to learn to solve the problems associated with standing up first and then walking. Did you know that most infants stand for the first time from a deep squat position? Yet as adults, most of us have lost the ability to get into and out of that position. Over time, infants learn other strategies to get from crawling to standing, thus adding to their movement vocabulary. So it goes throughout life. Every new movement we're exposed to adds to our movement vocabulary. This is why physical education at any age is necessary, so that you'll be able to fully express any movement you desire. Athletes are obviously among the most highly educated movers in their specific sport. This is how they can perform incredible movements on the court or the field with relative ease. But if we take that highly skill-specific athlete and ask them to perform a movement they haven't experienced before, they're likely to struggle initially. Once you've developed a movement competency in walking, squatting, picking things up off the ground, pushing and pulling with your body weight or a fraction of it, then it's appropriate that we start really working on that foundation to strengthen it, and then from there, expand on your personal movement vocabulary. Let's look at a few progression examples of expanding your movement vocabulary from those foundational movements. If we just take basic walking, which once mastered, we can then extend into high knee marching, things like skipping, jogging, running, or even sprinting. So these are all methods of locomotion which generate out of a walking gait. As far as level changes, squatting, split squatting, this would be more like a lunge pattern that some of you might be familiar with, or single leg squats would be another way to progress you through level changes. As far as pushing, you could start off doing leaning push-ups up against a countertop, maybe drop down and do push-ups off of a stability ball, then regular floor push-up or a traditional push-up, and maybe even evolving into a one-arm leaning push-up. And for pulling, I like to start with the body row where you're laying back towards the floor, hanging onto a rope or a strap, and pulling your body up to where your wrist meets your ribs, eventually lowering that down lower to a horizontal body row, an assisted pull-up, and eventually maybe even a body weight pull-up. That's another quick example of progression in pulling. All of these represent slight variations of the base movement, and thus having more options, you can apply this expanded vocabulary to fully explore your movement interests, whether it's health and fitness or recreational sports. From an evolutionary perspective, nature favors generalists. That is to say that those species that can adapt to their ever-changing environments are more likely to succeed, i.e., living to reproductive age. Species that rely on a very narrow set of resources are always at risk whenever the environment changes. The primary takeaway for us as active, healthy agers is to regain some of those foundational movement patterns and then maintain those patterns for as long as possible throughout life. I know we have all had have our movement preferences, but I encourage you to explore new movement practices, things like yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, Qigong, some of the martial arts, Zumba. These can all add potentially to your movement vocabulary. One of the greatest personal freedoms you can experience is knowing that you can personally participate in any activity you wish to because you've developed a broad set of movement skills. Once you get the basics down, then you can explore the other possibilities. This week's movement practice concept, we're going to finish up on what we started with in the previous episode where I talked about developing functional strength and using mostly body weight movements, deadlifts and hip hinging being the one notable exception. I try to make the point that at a minimum, we really do need the ability to be able to walk efficiently for an extended period of time if necessary, level change, picking things up, squatting down, pushing and pulling, all of those with our body weight or a fraction of it. And we need to know how to perform rotational movements safely, like swinging and chopping. So building and maintaining functional strength is a necessary foundation before we can safely start to develop power. Again, as a review, developing functional strength loads start with mastery of body weight movements. So work on those squats, the deadlift, body rows, and push-ups, pull-ups, that type of body weight movement. Once you can perform your body weight exercises for 10 or 15 repetitions, pull-ups might be a little tougher, but then you can start considering adding some resistance. For the majority of you listening to this show, if you can aspire to building up to doing 10 to 15 reps with your own body weight on those basic exercises, you should be in good stead to perform your daily activities. The following addresses those that are very active and perhaps play recreational sports and need a little more strength and power. This population can probably use a little more strength, and hence the following guidelines for weight loading various exercises. So if you find yourself in this category of very active, you might want to take note here of how I distinguish between just foundational strength and maybe getting up to adding greater strength to your routine. As a quick side note, many trainer certifications still use what's called a one repetition max method to determine the working load for your sets of repetitions. One protocol example is to start with a light weight, do 3 to 5 reps, add some more weight, do 3 to 5 reps until you keep doing this until you can only do 1 rep. And again, most of this audience should not even be thinking about attempting 1RMs. The problem, especially with older exercisers, is that doing just one max rep effort is generally not recommended for safety reasons. In fact, I personally don't think fitness enthusiasts of any age should ever do a 1 rep max. It just isn't worth the risk to benefit ratio is just not there for me. It often encourages bad behavior also, especially among young males. When I used to be a college instructor, this was one of the biggest things I had to kind of tone down, because especially young men want to know how much they can bench press one time. For whatever reason, we've adopted this as the metric of manliness over time. It seems to endure. What concerns me is that when athletes or individuals try to do 1RM bench presses, for example, you sometimes can end up wearing a barbell necktie. The only population, in my opinion, that legitimately needs to perform a 1 rep max type of lift are competitive power lifters. Those powerlifting, again, is the sport of squat, bench press, and deadlift, and they're scored on their max lift, so that makes sense. Or an Olympic weightlifter, where they're doing the clean and jerk or the snatch, and they're trying to do 1 rep with as much weight as they can. That's really the only population that should be messing around with 1RMs as far as I'm concerned. So let's take a look at one way that you can safely add resistance to your squat. If you're able to do 10 to 15 bodyweight squats down to a parallel thigh depth, then you might start to add 10% of your body weight. So for a 150-pound person, that's just 15 pounds. And see if you can do at least 6 to 8 reps with good form. We can gradually increase the weight until you're able to do 6 to 8 repetitions properly with whatever weight you build up to, but you probably can't get that 8th rep. So I like to use a strength protocol of somewhere between 6 and 8 reps, where you know you can get 6, but you might not get 8. So that will allow you to do enough reps, it's a safe load, and it's going to challenge you. That was a bit of a long-winded review for some strength concepts, but hopefully it will help you determine challenging but safe loads for yourself. Next in the continuum from strength, I want to touch on power. But coach, why do I need to worry about training power? I'm 60 years old. Well, I hope I can make a compelling case for adding elements of power into most folks' movement practice. First, we should probably define what power is in terms of movements or exercise. The simplest definition is to move an object or your body quickly or explosively. So this is not about strength, this is about going quickly. Movement, we will add hopping, skipping, and or jumping. Hopping is described as an exaggerated step, hopping forward from one foot to the next, as a slightly exaggerated walking pattern. One thing that's important to remember, learn to land on your forefoot first and then immediately anchor your heel. So if you're hopping or jumping, you do not want to land on your heels or flat on your feet. Try to land on that forefoot, get the heels down right away. As your forefoot strikes, your knees should be soft to help absorb the landing. These types of hops can be performed hopping forward and backward, side to side, or even a rotational hop where you're stepping 90 degrees to the left, hopping, coming back to center to your start point, and then taking a 90-degree hop to your right and continuing alternating in that fashion. Skipping is pretty straightforward but surprisingly challenging for many adults. If your body has forgotten how to skip, here's an easy way to regain the pattern if it's appropriate for you to add this into your movement practice. Make sure that you're moving in an opposite arm, opposite leg pattern though. To do this, just stand on one foot about with your right knee up about waist height. Bring your left arm up so that your fist is about as high as your shoulder, and then just hop off that right foot and switch. So you'll automatically fall right into that skipping pattern if you ever get lost. And finally, if appropriate for your body, low height jumps. Jumps are defined as leaving the ground from 2 feet at a time. So your traditional parallel stance, bend the knees and jump. And very importantly, again, learning how to land properly. Before you do any jumping, practice landing from a toe raise balance position. This is simply standing on your tiptoes, arms up next to your ears for about 3 to 5 seconds, and then as you lower down quickly, your hips should move back, your arms should swing back by your sides, and landing so that your weight is evenly distributed in your feet from the base of your toes to your heel. This might take some practice, and you may want to practice initially in a doorway if your balance is a little inconsistent. If you're able to perform a low-level two-legged jump sequence, it would be in the following order. So, feet hip to shoulder width apart, simultaneously pushing back your hips and flexing at the knees, swinging your arms back by your sides, and then swiftly swinging your arms forward as you extend your hips, and voila, you are off the ground a little bit. You can then progress to repetitive mini jumps of maybe 5 to 10, or grabbing that jump rope that's you haven't used in years and start doing a few jumps at a time and building up to half minute or a minute. Don't worry about jumping for height initially. Practice the mechanics of jumping and landing and make sure that you're always in a safe and stable position. I recognize that many of us over 50 are not able to perform these types of movements on the ground. We just have joints that are way too cranky, or we have joint replacements. So if you're in this group, then I would like to offer you to consider a mini tramp or a rebounder to get similar benefits of power production with a lot less impact. Start slow with a low amplitude type bounce where your feet are actually still staying in contact with the trampoline, and get comfortable with the up and down motion. As you feel more confident, slowly take your bounce to where your feet are coming up off the trampoline. If you need to practice in a doorway, unless you're too tall, do that so that you'll have a stable place to work and can grab a hold of something if you start to bounce off in a unpredictable way. There you have it, some entry-level progressions for developing some power. This will get those fast twitch muscle fibers working for a little when you need them to move quickly in real life. In case you've been wondering, why should I want to specifically train power, I'm going to give you a few examples that'll hopefully illustrate the point and inspire you to consider moving in this direction. Say you're standing at your stove with a pot of boiling water. Let's say that you accidentally knocked that pot handle and it starts to fall off the stove towards you. Thankfully, you've been training your nervous system to hop or jump quickly to get out of the way. A second example, let's say you're watching your grandchild at the park. You're sitting on a park bench with another grandparent talking. Suddenly you notice that Junior is heading for a busy street next to the park. Again, thankfully, you've been working on jumping a little and are able to kind of jump up to your feet and take a few quick running steps to head Junior off at the pass. Remember, when we do our movement practice, we are primarily training our nervous system to react to whatever movement we are training. Power movements like hopping, skipping, jumping need to be sprinkled into your regimen so that should the need arise, you're able to respond quickly. Work at the proper progression for yourself. Start with the basics, hopping and landing, and then if appropriate, progress to skipping and finally jumping. One final comment on power type training is focus on quality repetitions and stop before you get fatigued. This is not the type of training you want to beat yourself up with and get overly fatigued. So manage fatigue, only perform repetitions when you are relatively fresh and stop before your form deteriorates. All right, this week's wellness thought for the week. This week's quote comes from the Aboriginal life purpose. I'm always amazed and inspired by the natural wisdom of our many indigenous peoples around the planet. Here's an Aboriginal view of our life purpose. We are all visitors to this time, to this place. We're just passing through. Our purpose here is to observe, learn, grow, and love, and then return home. Our modern lifestyle tends to separate us from nature and each other in terms of authentic connection. Technology has afforded us many, many ways to stay connected with each other, but we seem to be losing true authentic connection with each other and with nature. The health benefits of just sitting out of doors, quieting your mind, and observing nature are well documented. The Japanese actually have an expression for this called nature bathing. In Europe, traditionally for centuries, the weekends have long been a time for families, including grandparents, to go out and walk in nature. Whether you're in a redwood grove, at the beach, along a stream or river, take time to observe the interconnection of life there where you're at, in that specific environment. Then perhaps ponder your relationship to this thing we call nature. This reminds me of a spoof some of you may have seen. This was a spoof of a prescription drug commercial. This was on YouTube some time back, but essentially the skit went like this, where this fellow is walking in the forest and the spokesman says, "See if some nature is right for you." Yeah, it's kind of funny, but how many of us make a daily practice of just sitting quietly in nature and observing? So let's go outside and see if nature's right for you. You're listening to KCIW, Active Healthy Aging, on 100.7 FM. This week's regeneration strategy, I'm going to continue talking about hanging for a bit and some other modalities. In the previous episode, I discussed the health benefits of hanging from an overhead bar. Again, do not try to do this if you have a shoulder or back condition where hanging might be contraindicated. And always check with your healthcare provider first. To quickly review, a few potential benefits of hanging, again, are to decompress the spine and take pressure off those vertebral discs, improve your posture, and improve your grip. I suggested finding an overhead bar, grabbing the bar while your feet remain on the ground or on a box, and then slowly accepting as much of your body weight as possible for about 15 to 30 seconds, and repeat for a total of initially 1 minute hanging time. So if you're just doing 10-second intervals, try to do 6 rounds of 10 seconds. As you get stronger, start lengthening your times until you can hang for 30 seconds or 1 minute. If you have strong, healthy shoulders, you may want to revisit your childhood ability of brachiating on some monkey bars. There's a good word for you, brachiating. Swinging from one arm to the next. Initially, start back with your feet on the ground or on a box, grab one bar with one hand and reach ahead to the forward bar with the other hand. And slowly try to accept as much of your body weight in this position as you can. Again, work up to hanging statically for about 30 seconds to a minute before you attempt to do actual swings. Now, let's look at some other forms of hanging that don't require you to actually hang on. First, there's the tilt table or teeter-totter some of you may have seen, where you strap your ankles in and tip back. This can be a good way for a lot of people to access the ability to traction out or decompress their spine. The only downside to this type of hanging is that it puts a lot of pressure on your ankles and knees. My personal favorite tool is an Om Gym. These were originally developed for doing supported yoga poses. Basically, you suspend the Om Gym on an overhead bar, sit on the cloth cradle, and tip yourself back upside down. And in this position, it's sort of an all-or-nothing proposition. So if you're not comfortable with hanging upside down, this is probably not a good thing to try. But the big advantage of this tool is that that cloth cradle wraps around your pelvis, which allows optimal traction to the hips and lumbar spine and allowing you to really decompress that spine. So if you are interested, I suggest you check out the Om Gym. If you just Google that, there's lots of videos. There are many knockoffs now from the original, so you may be able to find another system that accomplishes the same thing, where you can kind of wrap your legs around the cloth cradle as you're sitting in it and lean back. So as we finish up the show today, I want to remind you that you're listening to Active Healthy Aging on KCIW 100.7 on the FM dial. I'm Coach Ken, and I want to pass along our standard disclaimer at this point that the information and opinions expressed on this show are for informational and entertainment purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or healthcare provider regarding any medical issue you may be experiencing. Until next time, be well. Be fit.